From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The Florida legislature is rethinking how the state moves minors into adult court. Advocates are pushing a campaign to reform a process called direct filing that gives state prosecutors the choice of moving forward with those charges. They say the system unevenly hands out penalties. But state prosecutors say they're careful with who gets those charges, and there are checks in place to make sure the appropriate sanctions are handed out. We'll discuss how the system works and what advocates want to see changed. Plus, the mood of voters is one of the most important political factors in an election year, and with voters anxious, frightened, and angry, we'll explore possible causes from financial insecurity, fears over terrorism, and immigration issues. We'll also explore Florida's recent growth in independent voters and why so many voters are choosing no party affiliation. That's ahead on Gulf Coast Live. First, this news.
Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. The mood of voters is one of the most important political factors in an election year. In collaboration with the National NPR Network and talk show programs on member stations around the country, we'll explore what's at the core of voter anxieties this election season. The shrinking middle class and economic uncertainty is one factor. A Pew Research Center analysis of government data finds that the country's middle class is losing ground. The report finds that middle class wage earners accounted for 43% of aggregate U.S. income in 2014, down from 62% in 1970. Meanwhile, the greatest aggregate income gains have been made among top-tier wage earners. Terrorism and fears of an attack on the U.S. are also influencing voter opinions. A recent New York Times CBS News poll finds that Americans are more fearful of a terrorist attack than at any other time since the 9/11 attacks. Are changing national identity and shifting voter demographics also fuel voter opinions, particularly on the immigration debate? Plus, here in Florida, the Tampa Bay Times reports that the fastest growing segment of voters are those that choose no party affiliation. The amount of people registering to vote as independent grew to 24% as of November of last year, according to the State Division of Elections. In Charlotte, Collier, and Lee counties, NPA voters now outnumber Democrats. And in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties, no party affiliation voters outnumber Republicans. We'll explore what's behind the shift, what it indicates about voter anxiety, and how it could influence campaigning in the battleground state of Florida. Also, recent court decisions in Florida's redistricting process could alter the state's political landscape, with Florida's presidential primary coming up March 15th. Joining us now, we'll be talking with, political scientist and University of South Florida Distinguished Professor Dr. Susan McManus. She will be with us in a little bit here. Also, we're joined by Lee County Supervisor of Elections Sharon Harrington. And we're speaking on the phone right now with Florida League of Women Voters President Pamela Goodman. Thanks for your time today.
My pleasure, John. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
And we're also joined by Common Cause National Governing Board member and former Common Cause Florida Executive Director Peter Butzin. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
And I invite our listeners to join the conversation as well. Tell us what's at the core of your election anxiety this season. If you've registered with no party affiliation or changed your party affiliation to independent, tell us why. Connect with our guests by calling 877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Comment on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. Join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live, or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. And as a starting point for the conversation, let's first hear a piece from NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, which originally aired Monday morning.
You can't talk to voters this year without hearing some pretty powerful emotions, and all the candidates are trying to show they get it. For Republicans like Marco Rubio, it's President Obama's fault.
And a president that on 10 occasions around the world has apologized for America. Apologized. And this is why people are so frustrated. This is why they're so angry. That's why this election's played out so differently.
On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders' angry tirades have found a receptive audience.
This campaign is sending a message to the billionaire class. Yes, we have the guts to take you on.
Hillary Clinton has talked herself hoarse, explaining that she takes seriously the fears and insecurities of ordinary voters.
They're worried that they're going to be left behind while the people on the top, the guys who always get ahead, keep taking, leaving very little for anybody else. There's a lot of worry.
And no one has identified with or stoked voters' anger better than Donald Trump.
I will gladly accept the mantle of anger. Our military is a disaster. Our health care is a horror show. Obamacare, we're going to repeal it and replace it. We have no borders. Our vets are being treated horribly. Illegal immigration is beyond belief.
There are lots of good reasons voters are so ticked off this year. Number one, says former White House aide Bill Galston, is the absence of the kind of broadly shared economic growth that makes the American dream possible.
When you consider the fact that household incomes are still thousands of dollars below where they were at the end of the Clinton administration, people have gone a long time without making a lot of progress, and they know it. They're feeling it, and they're not very happy about it.
Another big factor is terrorism. Whether or not you think ISIS poses an existential threat to the United States, after San Bernardino, there was no question that the war on terror has come back home, and that's scary. Then there's demographic change, says Harvard political scientist Danielle Allen, who points out that 2014 was the first year the majority of American kindergartners were minorities.
So we're only a dozen years away from majority-minority voting cohorts entering into our voting ranks. So in other words, in some parts of the country in particular, there's just a sort of incredibly durable tradition of white political and social control. And that demographic transition is forcing to ahead the question of what happens now.
This is why immigration has become such a flashpoint, particularly in the Republican primaries. Professor Roberto Serro is an immigration expert at the University of Southern California.
One of the most illustrative things that has happened this year was in the way that Donald Trump switched from Mexicans to Muslims almost instantaneously.
It was a simple pivot after San Bernardino. Terrorism and labor migration became one thing.
And what that tells you is that it's not specific immigrants. It's not even necessarily immigration itself. But this becomes the vehicle to touch people's anxieties about a whole bunch of other matters.
This year, immigration became all wrapped up in people's anxieties about jobs, terrorism, and the failure of government to perform basic functions like policing the border. Exacerbating all these anxiety-producing factors is a gridlocked political system that can't seem to solve big problems no matter which party has control. And here, Republicans are angry at their own party's leaders in Washington in a way Democrats just aren't, says conservative analyst Henry Olson, author of The Four Faces of the Republican Party.
And they've been listening to politicians who have been telling them for decades now that government can and ought to shrink quickly. And they think that when Republicans are elected, that that's what Republicans got elected on. So they are angry for things that they've been told they can have, but most people in politics know they really can't.
Voters in both parties are angry at elites. But just like everything else this year, Democratic and Republican populists are pointing their pitchforks at two very different targets. Again, Bill Galston.
For the Republicans, the anti-elite focus is on government and professional experts of all kinds. And for the Democrats, and especially the more left-leaning Democrats, the focus is on economic and financial elites.
And it's not clear, says Galston, which candidates will benefit most from all that angry anti-elitism when voters finally start going to the polls next month.
Elections serve a number of very important functions, and one of them is to hold up a mirror to society. We learn something about who we are and what we're feeling and what we want through the electoral process. And a lot of things that are beneath the surface come to the surface during the intensity of electoral combat.
And those feelings are defining the 2016 elections. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Washington.
And Mara Liasson's story there touches on a number of things, one being voter concerns over economic insecurity. A poll taken this month by the Florida Chamber Political Institute finds that job creation and improving the economy to be a top concern among Florida voters. Susan McManus, do you think this is a big factor when it comes to voter anxiety here in Florida? Isn't Florida's economy?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. When you talk about middle class, and particularly low income, non-college educated, middle class, these are the very, very people who feel alienated. They've never been convinced that we are out of the Great Recession because they personally have not experienced it in their own lives wages stagnant, just as was pointed out. Maybe they move from full-time to part-time. Maybe somebody in their family is unemployed. All they know is that prices are going up, health care is going up, more expensive to send their kids to college, and stagnant wages, and that Washington gets nothing done. And I think that really tells the story of both the Sanders campaign as well as the Trump campaign. Disaffected people who hate politicians because they've done nothing to ease the anxieties economically in their lives. And related to that, of course, is for a lot of these middle-class people, they also think that government helps the rich through corporate tax credits and all that, and they help the undeserving poor by giving everything while these people are trying to make a living working and being a good citizen. It's just a formula for people being really angry.
And on that same issue of fears over economic insecurity, you know, the message from Governor Scott's administration is overwhelmingly positive. Just last week, he was in the Fort Myers area for the dedication of Hertz new global headquarters, announcing that the unemployment rate had once again fallen slightly in December. Is Scott's message getting across, or do you think there's, you know, maybe a difference between what we're hearing from the Scott administration and what low-income folks here in Florida are actually living in their day-to-day lives?
Well, certainly people do expect leaders to work on the job situation. But it's still the case that even when the governor goes around and opens up new places and talks about new jobs, there's still some people that don't feel touched by that announcement. But would they rather have somebody talk about it and a little evidence? Yes. But in terms of, does that really relieve fear that just tomorrow they could lose their own job and be really in an economic bind? It doesn't really, but it's better than nothing at all, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move over to, you know, fears about terrorism. You know, earlier I'd highlighted a recent New York Times CBS poll finding that Americans are more fearful of a terrorist attack than at any time since 9/11. Additionally, 44% said a terrorist attack is very likely to occur here in the next few months, and 7 out of 10 of those polled said the fight against ISIS is going badly. How have we seen this reflected in the campaigns of presidential hopefuls?
Well, there is a very unique moment in American history in politics, and that's what we're in right now, which is a double whammy fear. Fear on the economic front and fear on the personal safety front, whether it's from terrorism or from these random mass shootings of people in everyday places, movie theaters, schools, churches, you name it. When people fear their own personal security, they're obviously looking for someone who promises to take care of that situation. The equivalent would be in a local election if suddenly you have a massive crime wave. Then everybody is wanting whomever is running for office to talk about that. But terrorism on our own soil has really frightened Americans considerably, particularly the random nature of it and the inability of the government to really be on the offensive, and it's troubling to people, the uncertainty. So you've got double whammy, uncertainty on their economic front and uncertainty on their personal safety front, and it really does spell a very nervous but interested but also anger but apprehensive electorate.
And Donald Trump has proposed, you know, blocking Muslims from entering the country, monitoring mosques here in the U.S. Is he perhaps benefiting a great deal from this fear?
Oh, without question he is. And, you know, again, it goes back to the security. And it also, even the immigrant issue is part of the economic issue, because the same individuals that we were talking about, that would be low-income, lower middle class, non-college educated, just kind of what we used to call the blue-collar workers in this country. Their perception is that immigrants are flooding into the country, that they're taking their jobs, that they're creating, wreaking havoc from a security perspective. You know, that is certainly not a view that can be heavily substantiated. But in the minds of these people, perception is reality, and it's a very, very big threat to them.
And Susan McManus, do you think there might be sort of an unspoken wave of xenophobia at play here as
well?
Yeah,
this is Peter Bettine from Common Cause. I just lost the signal a couple minutes ago.
Okay, you're hearing us now, though, it sounds like.
Okay, well, yes, I guess I am.
Okay, good, good, good.
Sorry.
Good, that's fine, that's fine. Susan, do you think there's, you know, maybe a level of xenophobia at play here and the fears over immigration?
Absolutely, but you can understand why. It doesn't make it right. But in the world of politics, you must understand what people are thinking and why they're thinking, and then you can think of ways to intervene and come up with better ways of explaining things and so forth. But people feel threatened on all fronts, the type of voters that we're talking about. And they don't believe what established politicians say. They don't believe a thing coming out of the words of politicians in Washington, because we know that voters who are just casual voters every 4 years might think about voting. Their idea of politicians is Washington-based. Mm-hmm. And we have not had favorable ratings for Congress for at least 8 or 9 years. They've been in the 20s. And so they just don't trust that. They also don't really trust much of the media, because it's become very polarized. And, you know, we're in a dangerous position in this country where people are really starting to have distrust of our governing institutions, which is not a healthy thing for our democracy.
We're exploring the mood of voters and what's behind voter anxieties in this election year as part of a collaborative project with NPR and member stations around the country. We're talking with USF political scientist Susan McManus, Florida League of Women Voters President Pamela Goodman, Peter Butzin with Common Cause Florida, and Lee County Supervisor of Elections Sharon Harrington. Listeners can connect with our guests and join the conversation. What's causing you anxiety this election season? And if you've recently switched your party affiliation, tell us why. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And another possible indicator of the mood of Florida voters could be the increase of those registering with no party affiliation. Here in Southwest Florida, Charlotte, Collier, and Lee counties now have more voters registered as independents than as Democrats. In South Florida, the reverse is true. Independent voters in Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach counties now outnumber Republican voters. No party affiliation voters are also outnumbering major party voters in Central Florida counties as well. Sharon Harrington, as the supervisor of elections here in Lee County, what can you tell us about this trend locally? How long has this been going on, or when did you first notice it, I suppose?
We started noticing a big difference, I would say at least 2 or 3 years ago. The more new applications we were getting in, the more NPAs we were registering. But it has seemed in the last year or so to really increase quite a bit.
Do you know if this is primarily people, you know, perhaps registering to vote for the first time, or people who are, you know, going out of their way to change their party affiliation and they're already registered?
No, I think these people are registered. I think a lot of it, they're just disgruntled with the parties on both sides. They want to be able to, you know, have a say, but don't want to necessarily go with the teachings of either party. So I think it's more... they just don't want to be involved with a party situation.
Are there any demographic trends in this increase in no-party affiliation voters? The Tampa Bay Times recently reported that a large number of them registering as independent tend to be Hispanic and tend to be younger voters. Do you know if that's also the case in Lee County, or has it been kind
We
of...
haven't actually pulled demographics yet.
Okay.
We will be doing that very shortly. Once we close the books for the presidential preference primary on March 15th, we'll be able to pull the demographics on that, and we'll have a little bit clearer picture. But of the applications that I personally have seen, it seems to be across the board.
All right. And do people realize when they're registering as independent that because of Florida's closed primary system, they're effectively giving up their vote in the presidential preference primary?
Well, when they passed the motor voter bill, which allowed people to go out and register pretty much anywhere as long as there was an application available. Prior to that time, we had an opportunity to explain that to individuals. Now if they go to the Department of Motor Vehicles and they go ahead and register at the same time they're getting their driver's license or maybe making an address change on that driver's license, they will briefly mention it to them, but there's not a lot of instructions at that level. They will generally find out when they call and say that they would like to get a mail ballot for a particular election, and they find out they're not eligible for that election.
All right. And this kind of reminds me of a book called The Myth of the Independent Voter, which posits that most independents are closet partisans. I read one article indicating that when you have partisan or when you take partisan leaners out of the equation, less than 10% of independent voters are actually independent without a bent one way or the other toward the Republican or Democratic parties. Could we potentially be overblowing the impact of this trend?
I don't know. We don't really kind of get into that very much here at the office. We basically just want everybody to get out there and vote. But most of the people that I've talked to that were no party affiliation, they just basically tell me that they just want to be able to vote for the person and not necessarily because they're of one party or the other.
All right. And Susan McManus, Pamela Goodson, or Goodman, I wanted to get your thoughts on this as well. What do you think is the cause of people switching to NPA? Are they just fed up with political gridlock?
Well, I actually have run the January numbers, which will be posted on Safety Review tomorrow for the whole state of Florida, and broken down the NPAs by race and ethnicity and age and all of that. They are definitely younger, and NPAs are a larger portion of Hispanics and Asians than they are of blacks and whites, which fits in with the fact that many don't really understand American party system where they, you know, come here. But many of these people are new voters, the young portion of it. But the second thing is that we're seeing more and more private sector business types just wanting to change to NPA because of the toxic nature of partisan politics. And when it starts affecting their businesses, they just think it's not worth it. We don't know what percentage of people are changing because of that, but we do know that there is some of that going on.
All right. And Florida's trend of increasing the number of independent voters could certainly alter the political landscape. Other factors impacting that landscape include recent court decisions on the redrawing of Florida's political district boundaries. Peter Butzin, can you give us something of a primer on that issue and where we stand now?
Yeah, sure. Common Cause and Legal Wing voters have worked tirelessly, primarily through the courts, to protect the Fair Districting Amendment, the Fair District Florida Amendment, that passed by an overwhelming majority of Florida voters back in 2010. The legislature showed that it was unwilling or unable to follow the constitutional anti-gerrymandering standards, so the League and Common Cause took the legislature to court, and I'm happy to say that we were 100% successful. That is, we have recently, the courts have approved the maps that our organizations drew both for the Senate districts and the congressional districts. And as a result of that, Florida voters will be in a much better position to select their legislators rather than legislators selecting their voters. It means that there will be a better opportunity for voting to reflect the party affiliation of voters in Florida. And I would regard this as a very important and significant first step. However, it is only a first step. In my opinion, the Florida legislature remains a tool of business interests, particularly wealthy business interests. And while such interests have every right to be represented at the table, so do typical Floridians. Families who are struggling to make ends meet, to send their children to college, to pay for escalating costs of health care. So we face major challenges that public policymakers neglect because, and I would, again, this is my opinion, the opinion of our organization, Common Cause, because obscene campaign contributions incentivizes our public policymakers to ignore these challenges. And as a result, our state refuses to recognize decent health care as a right rather than a privilege. Our environment has become more polluted. We're in a race to the bottom in promoting state-sponsored business subsidies. We rank nearly as low as Mississippi in spending on services to children, the mentally ill, students, and the imprisoned. So although redistricting reform is an important first step, until we get true campaign finance reform, ethics reform in the state of Florida that gives the typical voter a better voice in politics and making their voice heard, we are going to continue to face challenges that our public policy process seems to be unable or unwilling to tackle.
I see. Well, that is all the time we have for today's program, unfortunately. But I want to thank my guests, Pamela Goodman, President of the League of Women Voters of Florida, Susan McManus, political scientist with USF, Peter Butzin with Common Cause. He's on their national governing board and a former Common Cause Florida executive director. Also, thanks to Sharon Harrington with the Lee County Supervisor of Elections. Been great speaking with you all. There's more information on today's show, as well as an archive of past shows at our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers, Richard Chinqui and Topher Forges. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM.